Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est?
Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience is with us in studio this week to tell us about the making of, well, the life and work of Talking Heads.
Well, what I want to say to you, Andrea, is stop making sense.
Why?
That is specifically what we're talking about today. Again,
I like Psycho Killer, though.
Psycho Killer, it's iconic, and it weaves into your brain because you will have seen it in films, it will be in soundtracks and things. It's one of these things you mightn't actually sit down and listen to, but it's present.
I can assure you this is not an album now I'm familiar with, so tell me about it.
I've fallen off my chair, Andrea. I didn't think so, but I have gone off-piste a little bit here again. As opposed to choosing an album, I've chosen an actual concert film.
Okay.
This is an iconic moment. We're in the mid-80s, Talking Heads, interesting character, David Byrne, born in Scotland.
Okay.
Family emigrates to initially Canada and then the United States. He, an artistic young man, and he attends art college in Rhode Island, and he starts meeting like-minded people. But what I will say is he's musical, but he's also got a very keen sense of the visual. And this film was self-funded. So they were successful, but they weren't, you know, monster.
So it wasn't the first album then?
No, Stop Making Sense in itself is not what you'd call a standalone album. It features songs in their career leading up to that. So it's definitely not. They broke up, so you're talking 77 to 91 was Talking Heads. They broke up in 1991. So this is not quite midway through their journey. But I think what David Byrne, who has, as I said, this very visual sense of what he's doing and very interested in how music looks, not just how it sounds, if that makes any sense at all. But in fairness, we've stopped making sense. This was his vision of how to present a live concert. And he brought in a director who you might know by name, Jonathan Demme, but Jonathan Demme directed The Silence of the Lambs, apart from everything else, some years later.
Yeah.
But the band themselves raised $1.2 million and shot this over four nights in a theatre in LA. And the attention to detail on not only, as I said, sound, but how the whole thing looked was so important.
Before we take a listen to some of the other songs, Psycho Killer, that's obviously been hugely successful.
It was a huge hit for them prior to this. So
yeah.
I think that was actually from their first album. And yeah, we've seen it, as I said, in many a soundtrack
as
well. So, but an amazing song. That is Life During Wartime, and it's a foot tapper. Very stripped back music, you know. It doesn't have a full huge sound to it, but when you're watching the performance of this, and this is why, you know, and I know many of the people listening will have seen this concert video, his dancing in this particular song is incredible. He basically gives an aerobics lesson, and David Byrne is a chap, without being in any way mean to him, he doesn't look almost the way he sounds, if you know what I mean. He kind of looks like a guy who works in an office. He doesn't have crazy hair. He looks rather presentable.
Because they're a rock band.
Are they?
Is that?
Yeah, well, rock band is a generic term. I suppose people would say heavy punk influence.
Okay, so I was going to say, what genre would you describe them as?
I would say they more or less reshaped a genre known as new wave.
Okay.
So that would be... and again, I hate putting things in boxes like that. But when you're one of the questions you often ask me is how influential is. And this concert video on its own, I think, had an amazingly impactful influence on all music videos.
Going
and live
forward.
Performances going forward.
How successful was it?
hugely successful.
Yeah. In the States, though.
In the States, yeah, absolutely. So this now, this single didn't you know reach number one, but it stuck around in the American charts for months and months and months. And I also want to bring our listeners back to the mid '80s in Dublin to the Ambassador Theatre, because the Ambassador Theatre showed this every week for about a year.
The live concert footage, basically,
in
yeah.
The Ambassador. And it now this is one of those beautiful moments where I get to say I was too young.
Right.
I don't get to do that often enough. But I'd love the people out in Ireland listening, if they actually have memories of that, because
let us know. Because it was 087 1400 106.
Yeah. It was part of the zeitgeist of going out in Dublin that people would attend this, and it became a kind of a
like you were at the concert, I suppose.
It was like a discotheque. People were dancing in the aisles of the theatre and
love
everything.
It.
And the beautiful thing about this coming full circle is that although Talking Heads broke up in 1991, David Byrne would return to play in The Ambassador
in
2002.
What about this one?
There it is, Burning Down the House.
That's one of their more recent ones, is it?
Well, no, I mean...
era.
You see, I'm not trying to second guess you, but I know these songs have seeped into you.
Oh yeah, no, I know this.
Yeah, and one thing I have to talk about, if I'm talking about Talking Heads, is they are overtly political. And this would have been recorded at the peak or trough, depending on your perspective, of the Reagan years. And that idea of the dismantling...
So it's 90s?
No, 80s. 80s.
Okay.
Mid-80s.
Mid-80s.
Reagan was, 80 to 88 kind of time. And I always viewed this band as being very opposed to that type of politics. And, I mean, I was quite young when this was the thing. But I remember these songs. And when I became a little bit older, maybe developed a greater appreciation for them. But when I was in secondary school... I did music up until, and now I'm going to show my age, Intercert.
Mm.
I did the last ever Intercert in 1991. Talking Heads were the only modern band to be featured in the official curriculum book.
Wow, right, yeah.
And I always remember there was a picture of David Byrne on stage, and underneath it said, Talking Heads are one of the most important modern music bands of all time. And I thought, well, that's an amazing compliment.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand it.
I love that you remembered.
But they had this, they have this very, very smart, intelligent way. They're not Rage Against the Machine, do you know what I mean? It's not that kind of in your face, but it's very anti-establishment.
Yeah. What inspired their sound, do you think?
They grew up in the era of New York punk. So they were art students. And in fairness as well, to give a shout out to the amazing Ramones, one of their first ever gigs, Talking Heads, they would have actually been the support act for the Ramones. Which is good, because you don't want to be going on after the Ramones. They tear it up and it was mayhem. But Talking Heads developed a huge cult following, because they're not only kind of music icons, they also have that kind of element of style to it as well. There it is, Take Me to the River. And this is not a David Byrne song. And I should point out, David did write most of the song. This is Al Green.
How many in the band, actually? How many were in it?
Four key members, three of whom met in the same art school in Rhode Island. And another chap from Wisconsin, France, who France with a Z. And he's a little bit older. David Byrne, as I said, a man of Scottish heritage. Remained, never took American citizenship until I think 2012, and as of 2020 is a citizen of the Republic of Ireland as well.
Go on.
I can't help feel maybe a post-Brexit, let me get a different type of passport.
Where does he stand among the greats?
he's a very unassuming character.
Right.
He is charismatic and yet quiet. He is flamboyant and yet unassuming. He is, for many, a cultural icon and yet a man who lets his music do the talking. He's very funny. He's very clever. I think he is probably one of the most influential single artists of the last 40 years.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. And as I said, it's, you know, the actual band Talking Heads broke up in 1991. But in terms of the influence on music, he worked with so many people like that. Brian Eno is involved here. Huge, huge influence. And I know this concert film it stands alone. You know, there's very few concert films. Think of great concert films that you can name. And there's very few.
Yeah, well, and also very unusual of its time.
Very unusual of its time. Very iconic. And as I said, the band put this together themselves. The only other one that stands up in kind of real music history is The Last Waltz, which is the famous last performance of the band. But I think in terms of style and the shaping of the music video, this is iconic.
Finally, you've picked Once in a Lifetime as your final selection today.
I have to, hands on the table, my favourite Talking Heads song.
Yeah, okay.
I just love it. It's the vocals in it, the way the beat works, it's so quirky. I think without pigeonholing that word quirk, there's always this slight eccentricity to everything that Talking Heads did and the way David Byrne performed. And I can still see him in this concert video. He went off stage and he got changed into an oversized suit. And there's various theories as to why he did this. But one of the reasons he wanted the slightly incongruous nature of life and how we're made to try and fit into the roles we're given and like the suit that we're made to wear. And this song, Once in a Lifetime, is the opening sequence, as we'll learn, is all about these questions of, well, how did I get here?
Yeah.
And it's just, oh, it's fabulous. I love this.
Alan Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience, thanks a million for joining us to discuss the life and times and work of Talking Heads.
A pleasure. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.